Reardon's eyes were fixed on him so intently that the question came slowly, as if the effort to pronounce it were a distraction. "What do you mean? Why don't you hold to the purpose of your life as clearly and rigidly as you hold to the purpose of your mills? What do you mean? You have judged every brick within this place by its value to the goal of making steel. Have you been as strict about the goal which your work and your steel are serving? What do you wish to achieve by giving your life to the making of steel? By what standard of value do you judge your days? For instance, why did you spend 10 years of exacting effort to produce Reardon metal?" Reardon looked away, the slight, slumping movement of his shoulders like a sigh of release and disappointment. "If you have to ask that, then you wouldn't understand. If I told you that I understand it but you don't, would you throw me out of here? I should have thrown you out of here anyway. So go ahead, tell me what you mean. Are you proud of the rail of the John Galt line?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"Because it's the best rail ever made."
"Why did you make it?"
"In order to make money."
"There were many easier ways to make money. Why did you choose the hardest?"
"You said it in your speech at Taggart's wedding. In order to exchange my best effort for the best effort of others."
"If that was your purpose, have you achieved it?" A beat of time vanished in a heavy drop of silence.
"No," said Reardon.
"Have you made any money?"
"No."
"When you strain your energy to its utmost in order to produce the best, do you expect to be rewarded for it or punished?"
Reardon did not answer.
"By every standard of decency, of honor, of justice known to you, are you convinced that you should have been rewarded for it?"
"Yes," said Reardon, his voice low.
"Then, if you were punished instead, what sort of code have you accepted?" Reardon did not answer. "It is generally assumed," said Francisco, "that living in a human society makes one's life much easier and safer than if one were left alone to struggle against nature on a desert island. Now, wherever there is a man who needs or uses metal in any way, Reardon metal has made his life easier for him. Has it made yours easier for you?"
"No,"
said Reardon, his voice low. "Has it left your life as it was before you produced the metal?"
"No,"
said Reardon, the word breaking off as if he had cut short the thought that followed. Francisco's voice lashed at him suddenly as a command. "Say it."
"It has made it harder,"
said Reardon tonelessly. "When you felt proud of the rail of the John Galt line," said Francisco, the measured rhythm of his voice giving a ruthless clarity to his words, "what sort of men did you think of? Did you want to see that line used by your equals, by giants of productive energy such as Ellis Wyatt, whom it would help to reach higher and still higher achievements of their own?"
"Yes," said Reardon eagerly.
"Did you want to see it used by men who could not equal the power of your mind, but who would equal your moral integrity, men such as Eddie Willis, who could never invent your metal, but who would do their best, work as hard as you did, live by their own effort, and riding on your rail, give a moment's silent thanks to the man who gave them more than they could give him?"
"Yes," said Reardon gently.
"Did you want to see it used by whining rotters who never rouse themselves to any effort, who do not possess the ability of a filing clerk, but demand the income of a company president, who drift from failure to failure and expect you to pay their bills, who hold their wishing as an equivalent of your work and their need as a higher claim to reward than your effort, who demand that you serve them, who demand that it be the aim of your life to serve them, who demand that your strength be the voiceless, rightless, unpaid, unrewarded slave of their impotence, who proclaim that you are born to serfdom by reason of your genius, while they are born to rule by the grace of incompetence, that yours is only to give, but theirs only to take, that yours is to produce, but theirs to consume, that you are not to be paid neither in matter nor in spirit, neither by wealth nor by recognition, nor by respect nor by gratitude, so that they would ride on your rail and sneer at you and curse you, since they owe you nothing, not even the effort of taking off their hats, which you paid for. Would this be what you wanted? Would you feel proud of it?"
"I'd blast that rail first," said Reardon,
his lips white. "Then why don't you do it, Mr. Reardon?
Of the three kinds of men I described, which men are being destroyed and which are using your line today? They heard the distant metal heartbeats of the mills through the long thread of silence.
What I described last, said Francisco, is any man who proclaims his right to a single penny of another man's effort.
Reardon did not answer. He was looking at the reflection of the neon sign on dark windows in the distance.
You take pride in setting no limit to your endurance, Mr. Reardon, because you think that you are doing right. What if you aren't? What if you're placing your virtue in the service of evil and letting it become a tool for the destruction of everything you love, respect, and admire? Why don't you uphold your own code of values among men as you do among iron smelters, you who won't allow 1% of impurity into an alloy of metal? What have you allowed into your moral code?
Reardon sat very still. The words in his mind were like the beat of steps down the trail he had been seeking. The words were, "The sanction of the victim."
You, who would not submit to the hardships of nature, but set out to conquer it and place it in the service of your joy and your comfort, to what have you submitted at the hands of men? You who knew from your work that one bears punishment only for being wrong, what have you been willing to bear and for what reason? All your life you have heard yourself denounced, not for your faults, but for your greatest virtues. You have been hated, not for your mistakes, but for your achievements. You have been scorned for all those qualities of character which are your highest pride. You have been called selfish for the courage of acting on your own judgment and bearing sole responsibility for your own life. You have been called arrogant for your independent mind. You have been called cruel for your unyielding integrity. You have been called antisocial for the vision that made you venture upon undiscovered roads. You have been called ruthless for the strength and self-discipline of your drive to your purpose. You have been called greedy for the magnificence of your power to create wealth. You who've expended an inconceivable flow of energy have been called a parasite. You who've created abundance where there had been nothing but wastelands and helpless starving men before you have been called a robber. You who've kept them all alive have been called an exploiter. You, the purest and most moral man among them, have been sneered at as a vulgar materialist. Have you stopped to ask them by what right, by what code, by what standard? No, you have borne it all and kept silent. You bowed to their code, and you never upheld your own. You knew what exacting morality was needed to produce a single metal rail, but you let them brand you as immoral. You knew that man needs the strictest code of values to deal with nature, but you thought that you needed no such code to deal with men. You left the deadliest weapon in the hands of your enemies, a weapon you never suspected or understood. Their moral code is their weapon. Ask yourself how deeply and in how many terrible ways you have accepted it. Ask yourself what is it that a code of moral values does to a man's life and why he can't exist without it, and what happens to him if he accepts the wrong standard by which the evil is the good. Shall I tell you why you're drawn to me, even though you think you ought to damn me? It's because I'm the first man who has given you what the whole world owes you, and what you should have demanded of all men before you dealt with them, a moral sanction.
Reardon whirled to him, then remained still, with a stillness like a gasp. Francisco leaned forward as if he were reaching the landing of a dangerous flight, and his eyes were steady, but their glance seemed to tremble with intensity.
You're guilty of a great sin, Mr. Reardon, much guiltier than they tell you, but not in the way they preach. The worst guilt is to accept an undeserved guilt, and that is what you have been doing all your life. You have been paying blackmail, not for your vices, but for your virtues. You have been willing to carry the load of an unearned punishment, and to let it grow the heavier, the greater the virtues you practiced. But your virtues were those which kept men alive. Your own moral code, the one you lived by but never stated, acknowledged, or defended, was the code that preserves man's existence. If you were punished for it, what was the nature of those who punished you? Yours was the code of life. What then is theirs? What standard of value lies at its root? What is its ultimate purpose? Do you think that what you're facing is merely a conspiracy to seize your wealth? You who know the source of wealth should know it's much more and much worse than that. Did you ask me to name man's motive power? Man's motive power is his moral code. Ask yourself where their code is leading you and what it offers you as your final goal. A viler evil than to murder a man is to sell him suicide as an act of virtue. A viler evil than to throw a man into a sacrificial furnace is to demand that he leap in of his own will, and that he build the furnace besides. By their own statement, it is they who need you, and have nothing to offer you in return. By their own statement, you must support them because they cannot survive without you. Consider the obscenity of offering their impotence and their need of you, as a justification for your torture. Are you willing to accept it? Do you care to purchase at the price of your great endurance, at the price of your agony, the satisfaction of the needs of your own destroyers?
No.